Welcome to Geopolitical Horizons, the podcast from thegeopolitics.com. We're going to continue with our geopolitics of different regions. Today, we're going to go through Africa. We've got Geopolity founder Adnan Khan here to help us get a good understanding of Africa. How are you keeping, Adnan?
Yeah, I'm good, Yusuf. How are you doing?
I'm good. Did you have any of the dust and the sand from the Saharan Desert on your car?
No, I've not checked yet, but I have heard we seem to be getting a lot of Sahara Desert dust in the UK, which is quite funny.
Yeah, across all the cars. My car doesn't look as bad anymore.
I'm sure it doesn't.
Obviously, Africa is more than just desert. So I think a good place to start is what are Africa's key features to help us understand what the continent is about?
Okay, so I think probably a good place to start is just have a look at what are some of its most natural features. So I think the first thing is just the sheer size of Africa. If we were to take a map, the actual size of Africa, you can actually fit, Yusuf, the US, Europe, India, Japan, and China all into Africa. So all of these countries combined in terms of geographic size, still don't make up Africa. And if you think China and India are the largest populated countries in the world, so the sheer size of Africa is absolutely huge. Now, when we last looked at Europe, one of the features of Europe was is you have a lot of people concentrated in a very small space. Africa is very different. Africa is absolutely huge. It's a huge, expansive landmass. It has the Sahara to its north. And then on the west and in the east, you have the Atlantic and you have the Indian Oceans. So despite the fact that Africa is surrounded by oceans, what you find is internal land passage is not actually that straightforward. And the reason why is Africa actually has very few rivers. If you look at Northern Europe, if you look at America, it's got navigable rivers. And that helps the movement of people. But more importantly, it's the cheapest way to move goods, which leads to economic development. This is something Africa doesn't have due to the way the geography is of the continent. So as a result of these things, what you find, Yusuf, is Africa, despite being a large continent, it's not evenly populated. In fact, you find that the population of Africa is actually heavily concentrated in around four or five areas. When I was preparing for this, I was quite shocked, Yusuf, that all of Africa, they live on around 33% of the territory. And there's reasons for this, because most of Africa is desert. A lot of Africa is forest. And obviously, you need water sources if you want to survive as a people. So as a result, what you find is people either live along the coast or they live along major water systems, which there isn't really a lot in Africa. So most of Africa is uninhabited. The population is concentrated in a couple of areas. So really, the final key feature of Africa is, despite there being 54 nations in Africa, most people in Africa still identify with their tribe or their clan. They don't really identify with their nation state. And like most of the world, the nation state was a European export rather than something that was embraced by the people. So the fact that we have 54 nations in Africa, Egypt, Nigeria, South Africa, people actually identify with their tribe and their clan rather than the actual nation. And this causes major issues, which I'm sure we're going to delve into.
Before we get into that, I think a lot of people look at Africa from the colonial period onwards, but obviously Africa's got a history before that. What was happening before this colonial era?
So that's a good question, Yusuf, because for a lot of people, when you look at African history, it starts from the colonial era. So it always starts from slavery, the Europeans came, and Africa has a very long history. So the earliest recorded history of Africa is the pharaonic period, so the pharaohs, the Egyptian, ancient Egyptian civilization. So we're going back to 3300 BC. So the ancient Egypt civilization, as we know, the pharaohs, they are considered one of the earliest civilizations and longest civilization. If I'm correct, Yusuf, there's only one or two recorded civilizations prior to this. So Africa's history starts well before the European came over. And interestingly, Yusuf, the modern period where the European colonialists came over was not the first contact Europe had with Africa. In fact, the first exploration of Africa by Europeans was by the ancient Greeks and the Romans. So Alexander the Great, he was the leader of ancient Greece. He conquered Egypt, and Egypt became the breadbasket of ancient Greece. And then he even named the coastal city after himself, Alexandria. Then the Romans came to rule over Egypt and much of Africa after Alexander the Great. And they were the ones that introduced Christianity to Africa, which eventually spread across the continent over the centuries. Then from the 7th century via Egypt, Islam came from the Middle East, and Islam then spread across North Africa, and then eventually it went down to Central, Eastern, and Western Africa as well. And Christianity and Islam are still major faiths of many, many Africans today. So obviously for Islam and Christianity to spread in Africa, there had to already be people in Africa. So what that shows us is well before the modern Europeans came, there were already people there living and going about their normal lives. So in terms of civilization in Africa, what you find is over the centuries, Yusuf, we know that there have been many civilizations. Obviously, Africa was sparsely populated because of the nature of the terrain. So you find, for example, from the 9th century onwards, you had the Kingdom of Ghana, you had the Kingdom of Songhai, and then you also had various kingdoms that arose in Mali as well. And all of this was through the gold trade. West Africa was always famous for its gold, and it's probably one of the things that led the Europeans to come over. Then you had the Bantu-speaking people of Central Africa, and they eventually spread to Southern and Western Africa as well. So all of this, Yusuf, was going on before the Europeans came. Now, the modern Europeans, Yusuf, their interest in Africa really comes from the end of the 1400s, beginning of the 1500s. And that was when the Ottomans conquered Constantinople and they were expanding into Europe. So the Europeans needed to find an alternative trade route to the east, to China and India. Eventually, what they did was they went around Africa. So obviously, this began 1492, Vasco da Gama from Portugal. And obviously, that long journey, you need coastal ports. You need the supplies for your voyages. So you find yourself from the 15th to the 1700s, Europeans established many coastal ports along the eastern, southern, and western Africa. And then eventually, Yusuf, this is what led to the colonization of Africa.
Why did the Europeans colonize Africa? I mean, you did mention the gold in West Africa. Was it just purely resources?
Yeah, Yusuf, it's as simple as that. Industrialization required raw materials, and the raw materials were converted into finished goods, and those finished goods needed markets. And Africa was full of people, and it was full of mineral resources as well. And that's what attracted the Europeans. And whilst they initially made agreements with tribal clan leaders along the coast, you find over time these became military outposts. And then these were used to go into the interior of Africa. Now, interestingly, Yusuf, there wasn't fierce competition between the Europeans when it comes to Africa. They generally got along. The bigger problem was the people of Africa. So the Berlin Conference in 1885 in Germany, that was actually a conference for them to agree the different territories they're going to rule over. So it was like a gentleman's agreement. So the Europeans realized, look, we don't need to fight over Africa. We can all get a bit of the pie. So that's what you find, that that conference is what led to many of the borders that we have today and the nation states we have today. So the borders we have today, Yusuf, in Africa, they don't match the grand reality at all. And that's why they're so problematic. So you find most of the problems today in Africa are not between countries, it's between different clans and tribes within countries. So obviously what the Portuguese, Belgium, the British, the French, what they all did was they just created nations in a way that served them. They split certain tribes in order to divide and rule. And this is what has caused a lot of the problems that we still have today. And the colonial period was absolutely brutal for this region. We obviously know slavery became an enterprise. We know that many people were bought and sold. Many people were part of the Atlantic slave trade. So European countries would come and buy slaves from Africa and then sell them for a higher price in North and South America. So this obviously led to massive displacement, massive migration, and obviously led to the complete breakdown of the family structure in Africa. What we also find, Yusuf, is that the infrastructure that exists still in Africa, it was designed really as coastal ports and then train networks to go into the interior. So none of the infrastructure was designed to connect the different African countries or to help the people. It was purely for resource extraction. So this 300 or 400 year history of Africa was absolutely brutal, and it really still leaves its mark on the continent today.
In the 60s and 70s, many new nations had emerged in Africa as the continent it went through a process of decolonization. So it seems like the continent, it does take steps forward, but then in other times it seems like it's going back a step. What's the reason for this?
Well, the reason for this, Yusuf, really, real independence didn't take place. And what happened really was the following. After World War II, France and Britain ceased to be the global powers. America emerged as the global power. America established United Nations. And the United Nations was pushed by America to give independence to the colonies. Obviously, what France and Britain wanted to do, they wanted to enrich themselves again because they were bankrupt after World War II through their colonies. This is not something America wanted. America wanted these countries to become independent so then America can build relations with them. And then also, the Soviet Union was pushing for decolonization as well because the Soviet Union was all about ending colonialism and giving the workers their rights. So because of this pressure, what you find, France and Britain, not out of choice, they were actually forced to give independence to their colonies. So what they in effect did, Yusuf, was they left their lackeys in power. They created military, economic and political relationships where even though the colonialists physically left, these countries were still dependent upon their foreign master, whether it was through economics, whether it was through military bases. And most of what you find is the tribes that were put into power were the ones that actually collaborated with them. So really, decolonization wasn't a choice. It was forced upon the European powers. And as a result, they gave them independence in theory. They didn't give them independence in practice. So you find, for example, it's quite famous now that the countries of West Africa that were French colonies, all of them were forced to issue the French franc and they have to put their currency reserves in the French central bank. So effectively, France controls their currency, which means it controls their economy. This is the independence they really gave. So, you know, they still wanted to maintain a grip on these colonies. They wanted to utilize them for their resources. And really, this has just continued in the indirect form since decolonization.
Where does US come into all this? Because obviously, US wasn't part of the colonization, but it's obviously very much involved now with it being the global power.
So the American entry into Africa really begins after World War II. And it was initially through the call for decolonization. You find that throughout the 60s and 70s and the 80s, many, many countries became, in theory, independent. But really, you see the expansion of America really from the late 1990s, early 2000s. And a lot of this is to do with security, terrorism, and then eventually the war on terror. So you find what the US has done is actively worked to remove British and French influence. And a lot of this was through military coups. And it was through giving loans and economic aid to African countries. But America's large footprint is largely security-based. So America's established AFRICOM, which is the American military structure in the region. So you find America training many soldiers and many armies. And most armies you find, Yusuf, in Africa, they are really militias there to support the ruler, to support their chief or their clan leader. So really, America's strategy has been to remove French and British influence. Obviously, the British and the French are still trying to push back. But, you know, all this call for democracy, decolonization, for America, this was its way of removing European influence so it could benefit from the African continent. Obviously, for America, the American continent is full of resources. So for America, it doesn't really need Africa because it wants to take their resources. For America, it can see that Africa could enrich another nation. Another nation who lacks resources could use Africa to become powerful and challenge America. So it's through this lens America looks at Africa. It doesn't look at Africa from a perspective where it needs the resources because Africa is quite far away. And also there's plenty of resources within America and Latin America.
You know, with the recent coups in West Africa against a lot of pro-French leaders, is that an extension of US trying to actually get their influence in there?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to see seven coups now since 2020 within the lens of American attempts to remove European influence. So you find that West Africa, which really is still dominated by France, you find America's used the anti-French sentiment and really it's been training and doing exercises with all the different militaries there under the guise of terrorism. And you find one by one soldiers from the bottom of the army, they've been overthrowing their leaders. So just recently you had Gabon. And prior to that, you've seen in Burkina Faso, you got Mali, you got Niger, and the anti-French feeling is very, very high there. So yeah, this is really in the context of the European-American struggle over Africa. The European nations, Britain and France primarily, are trying to hold on to their colonies through any means possible. And America has been using security and the training of military to do this. And this isn't over yet. France is still trying to fight back. But that, yeah, is really, that's the context instability in West Africa is taking place in.
There's another power that's getting involved in Africa now, more recently, China. What is China up to in Africa?
So China, there's a number of ways we got to look at this. Firstly, through most of the World War II period, China presented itself as a supporter of the developing world. Because China itself was a developing country, China really promoted that it supports the development of the developing world. And at the developing world, we should be a... obviously, there's nothing much China could really do, because China, for most of the post-World War II world, it was a disaster zone. It had its own internal issues. Then once the open and reform era began, 1979, by the 1990s, it became clear to China that it needs resources, it needs raw materials. And naturally, Africa is full of raw materials and energy and mineral wealth. So really, from the 1990s onwards, China began developing relations with the African countries. And a lot of African resources now end up in China. So what China's done is, in the 2000s onwards, they tried to formalize this through bilateral deals, through setting up infrastructure in African countries. And obviously the principle Africa uses is, we're not coming with values. We just want bilateral economic deals, and we're prepared to trade with you. And if we need to invest in your country, build your infrastructure, we're prepared to do that. So this gets a lot of attention from Western media. They see China pouring lots of money into Africa. They see it through a political lens. But what you do find, interestingly, Yusuf, in Africa, China actually doesn't bump up against the European powers or America. Because China's not trying to politically structure Africa. It's not trying to solve problems. It's not trying to create structures through which the African countries can get on with each other. Really, it's making economic deals, and these are very large economic deals, but it needs the raw materials. So as a result, it's France, Britain, and Africa that are trying to politically organize the region. It's them who are trying to shape the region's future political direction. So because they're doing that and China's not, actually there's no conflict between them. And we have this funny scenario, Yusuf, where China has so much money in Africa, but it has zero political influence. Now that could change tomorrow. China might start using its foreign investments as a source of political influence. But for the moment, Africa forms part of China's domestic policy, which is, we need raw materials, and Africa has that. So despite all the media coverage China gets, what you find is China's not involved in any of the political issues. It does, from time to time, China does call for the global south, the development of the developing world. It criticizes the West and their values of keeping the third world poor. But beyond saying it, China hasn't really done anything. What China has done, the money has poured in, is for its domestic economy.
Finally, Adnan, what are the key trends we should look out for in this region?
So there's three key trends, Yusuf, really to keep an eye on in the medium to long term. The first is demographics. The population of Africa currently is 1.4 billion, and it's predicted to be to double by 2050, and it's expected to reach 4 billion by 2100. So what that means going forward is 25% of the global population will be in Africa. And the larger the population, the more workers you have, the more economic opportunities you have. Naturally, Yusuf, this growing population in Africa is always looked through the lens of poverty. There's too many people to feed. But as I've mentioned before, most of Africa is uninhabited. So it's not like they're going to run out of space. So this is the first trend, really, demographics. You know, can they take advantage of the youthful population in order to develop? The second trend, really, is it seems Europe's in decline in Africa. In most of the key countries, European powers have been replaced. You look at Egypt, you look at other parts of Africa, and you're seeing now a big battle, intense battle, taking place in West Africa. So this does have ramifications. Obviously, the Europeans used Africa for the slave trade, for resource extraction. They effectively leached off the continent for 200-300 years or even longer. So the decline of Europe represents a number of things. In one way, it represents an opportunity to break free, for them to actually develop. On the other hand, if Europe's going to be replaced by another power, that could pose its problems. So that's something to watch, I think, going forward. And then I think the other thing to watch, the final trend really, is the rise of Nigeria. Nigeria has the largest, one of the largest oil reserves in the continent. It's one of the largest oil producers. It has a growing population. And it's considered, along with Egypt and South Africa, one of the powers in the region. So can Nigeria utilize its resources? Can it develop infrastructure? And like South Africa in the past, if Nigeria can achieve this, it could actually become influential in the region. And then potentially other powers will have to engage with it. So demographics, the decline of Europe and Nigeria, these are probably the key trends to really watch going forward.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. This is another part of our series on how to make sense of the world. Please subscribe and follow us. You can also learn more on many other issues by accessing our website, where you'll find comprehensive insights. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.